Welcome to the CCTA Wake Up Call Show. Thank you for joining with us, and I ask you to visit our sponsors and supporters. My name is Bob Griswold.
Mary Griswold.
Alan Harrop.
Pat Park.
Sarah Stevens.
Glenn Fink.
Sarah, do you want to introduce yourself a little bit and tell us who you are?
Thank you. I'm Sarah Stevens. I'm currently serving in the North County General Assembly and have for 17 years now. Next year, I'm going to be running for State Supreme Court, and I would appreciate support. I have to be a little more limited to my conversation today because I can speak partly as a legislator, but I also have to be careful not to make certain statements because as a judge, I would be a constitutional conservative exercising judicial restraint. So I wouldn't be making the law. I would be trying to follow the law and make sure it's followed correctly. So thank you.
Thank you for being here.
Well, does somebody that we know make the law from the bench?
The person that I will be running against is Anita Earls, and she is a very activist judge. And she doesn't recognize judicial restraint in any way, shape, or form, and she's been clear about that. Before she became a judge, she sued the state of North Carolina trying to eliminate voter ID, saying it was racist and unfair. She also challenged frequently us on redistricting, and every time we followed the rules, she would still send them back. She wants to make the rules, not follow them.
When she sued the state over voter ID, she sued on behalf of the Southern
Poverty Law Center, and I think the NAACP, there were a whole group of them.
Oh.
And then when the case came up to the Supreme Court, she didn't recuse herself. She ruled on it, and we know that judges, if they have an interest in the case, and her name was on some of the lawsuits, they
right.
would substitute an attorney now, but her name was on the original lawsuits that she then in the court ruled upon.
Well, that's like the sorority sister ruling on the Federal Reserve lady that Trump's trying to fire and not recusing herself.
I he mean, did
there's
fire.
A lot of that.
She
with,
just didn't leave.
Yeah. There's a lot of that with left-wing judges.
I just want to make a comment about voter ID because it has come up a number of times. You can't open a bank account, cash a check, get on an airplane. I don't think you can get on a plane anymore or a train anymore without voter ID or without a picture ID. Way back in the day of Blockbuster, you couldn't rent a video without an ID. I mean, there are so many things that require ID. Why shouldn't voting, which is one of the most important things we do in a republic, require an ID?
We do that now. We do require it. It was viewed as trying to be a Jim Crow law to keep black people from voting because sometimes they have a harder time getting an ID. I don't understand the logic. I'm just saying that's what they said. We're legislators. We can't get in the governor's mansion unless we provide a state ID. And it can't be our state legislative tag. It has to be a state ID. We can't. So they talk one side and then the other.
Well, you can't get into either a Republican or a Democrat convention without a picture ID.
And likewise, most benefits require IDs.
Well,
the irony is that to say that they can't, they're not educated enough to get an ID.
It's so infantilizing.
That's an insult.
It's a total insult. And yet we were all supposed to pretend that it was true, that they couldn't get an ID because, you know, Whitey was holding them back. It's ridiculous.
Well, and they also wanted to include consular IDs, which you can't vote if you're not a citizen, but they were allowing consular IDs, matricula consulares, to be used. They also wanted to allow college IDs to be used, things that maybe don't have the full credibility of citizenship that we should have.
I can't think of a worse idea than having our college IDs used because you couldn't have a population that's biased more left. That would be crazy.
Well, having downloaded a bunch of voter information in the past and to see 450 people registered at the parking lot at NC State, it's nuts. It's crazy.
We also saw the situation where one of our grandkids, in signing up for her courses one year, without realizing it, signed a voter registration thing and wound up registered to vote in two different counties in North Carolina. And it took months to get that corrected. I mean, she realized the mistake fairly quickly. But, I mean, it was not an easy correction. It should have been.
Well, I think that the Democrats have shown for a number of years that they're going to oppose anything that makes the elections more secure. And if you want to make sure that it's secure, and you come up with, like, photo ID or other evidence, they're going to be opposed to it. I mean, some of them would like the illegals to be able to vote. In some places, they are. Some cities, you don't have to be a citizen.
Well,
and they do that statewide and you know, nationwide if they could.
It was funny. We were talking about this at lunch, that for a period of time, four Democrats were on the Supreme Court, four of the seven. And during that time, they passed these various laws. When we finally got back to the majority Republican, they went back in and said, no, felons cannot vote. Yes, you will have a voter ID. Yes, you will. They corrected several things. And as the speaker at lunch said, we declared it Rule of Law Day. We're going to go back to following the rule of law because activist judges did the very things that you're talking about.
One of the things I would like to ask you about, if you don't mind, is there's something going on now with redistricting. What's happened in Texas, where Texas is going back and redistricting, and now California, the Governor Newsom has come out and said, well, they're going to redistrict California, carve everything. And the whole idea that our system can be manipulated that way, that whatever party's in power can slice up the population so that they get as many districts that are overwhelmingly with their party members, that's troubling to me. And I just was curious what your thoughts about that process. It seems subject to all kinds of manipulation now that we're getting further and further away from treating things fairly.
And some of that's very activist, not legal. The Constitution says you redistrict every 10 years. So I was there for the 2010 redistricting and the 2020 redistricting. There are very specific rules about redistricting. The first is you attempt to keep a county whole as much as you can. Well, first we establish the population. And in North Carolina, we take the population number and divide by 120 for the House and 50 for the Senate. And then within plus or minus 5%, every district needs to be that much population. Now, then you try to stay within the county limits as much as you can. So you find the counties that within 5% plus or minus can be a district by themselves. Now, Wake County and Mecklenburg County both can be about 10 or 12 districts by themselves and not have to go outside of that area. And so that's how we redistrict. We followed those rules. We picked those proper counties first, then we would combine the counties to get to those numbers. It was a math issue, and it's all it should have been. Because we did that, and we got it right, and we have all of these Republican districts now, the Democrats came in and they bring in professors to come in and say, well, it really should be that everybody's equal vote counts. So you have all these Democrats in one county. We need to spread them out to some of these other smaller counties so that everybody's vote counts. That's not what the Constitution says. Mm-hmm. That's not what the law says.
Right.
And it says we only redistrict every 10 years unless for some reason the court overturns it. You don't just go back in and redistrict because you want to. Yeah. We did not go back in unless the court said you did something wrong. And if they gave us the rule, we went back and we applied the rule. It went that way three or four times until finally the court on which Anita Earle sat said, no, we're just going to draw the maps ourselves, which is directly against the Constitution. Mm-hmm. So these are activists. Mm-hmm. These are activist governments that are doing it their way, not the way the law applies. We've got it. When Obama was running for office, I absolutely got infuriated. Why were people believing in him? He said, I want to fundamentally change America. Yeah. What's wrong with the fundamentals of America?
I've got a pen and a phone.
What's wrong with the fundamentals of America? That's the thing we cherish and respect from our Constitution. And that's why a judge should be in that position.
So California is out of the 10-year period that they're supposed to, in other words, they're redistricting before they need to, it's supposed to redistrict.
That's correct. And apparently something happened in Texas that triggered the redistricting.
Yeah.
Something from a court perspective triggered to the redistricting, but nothing has triggered it in California. Okay. The governor just decided he wants to redo it.
Yeah.
We do it every decennial.
Yeah.
So we do the census, and then as soon as the census is completed is when you look at the redistricting again.
Yeah.
And the primary purpose for looking at that redistricting at that time is to determine our representation in Congress.
I think it's amazing. Now, we spent 35 years, full disclosure, we spent 35 years in Massachusetts, and the Massachusetts governor is talking about redistricting when every one of the districts is already a Democrat district.
Our district, because we lived in a place that was a fairly heavy Republican area, they included Fall River in our district. We looked like a seahorse to get Fall River in there to counter the Republican area that we were in, because Fall River was Democrat. But, I mean, it was, don't talk to me about redistricting and complain about it after you've been doing it for years. And I believe the voters in California have to vote on it, don't they?
The voters passed some kind of proposition in California that requires the governor to get permission from the citizenry before they can redistrict again. So he's got to get over that hump before he can start redistricting.
Yeah, my understanding is that George Soros is funding the
$80 million.
Yeah, the redistricting effort, which is not a surprise.
Yeah,
is that racketeering effort?
Yep, that's racketeering.
That's RICO. He seriously does need to be brought up on RICO charges.
Well, I was particularly upset and sad about the number of states, particularly up in the New England area, that have no Republican districts.
No.
There's like
Massachusetts does not have.
That's disenfranchisement.
Yeah.
Well, and I was elected in a seahorse district. They took the western half of my county and gave it to the southeastern part of another county.
Mm-hmm.
But I got elected, and now I have a more compact district.
Folks, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. Again, this is CCTA Wake Up Call. Thanks for listening.
What's the largest gun shop in Craven County? If you said East 70 Pond, you are correct. Since Drew got back from the most recent gun show, new guns have been pouring in faster than they can open the boxes. The large showroom at East 70 Pond, slam bam, full of firearms, new guns and used guns, long guns and handguns. You will find weapons for self-defense, hunting, target shooting, and collectibles. The team at East 70 Pond is friendly, courteous, and knowledgeable, especially in the area of guns. If East 70 Pond doesn't have the gun you are looking for, they'll try to find it. If you want to do a gun transfer, East 70 Pond will help you do it right. If you are looking to buy, sell, or trade a gun, there's no better place to do it than East 70 Pond. Of course, East 70 has tools, electronics, trolling motors, and a great selection of jewelry. But their specialty is guns. And we're talking hundreds of guns. Come see for yourself. East 70 Pond, across from Craven County Fairgrounds, New Bern.
Other restaurants claim their food is fresh and fast, but are they friendly? At Moore's, you're treated like family the minute you walk into their doors. With locations in Winterville, New Bern, Swansboro, Moorhead City, and Jacksonville, we've been practicing what we preach since 1945. At Moore's, our barbecue is slow-cooked and smoked over real wood daily until it's so tender it's falling off the bone. Combined with our fresh chicken, cooked-to-order seafood, and homemade fixins, we're sure you'll agree. If it's not Moore's, it's less.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business. It's the passion of folks who work there. If bale and wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Welcome back again. Thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. Just want to fill in for one quick session. We're Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association is a 501c3 organization. We cannot endorse candidates. We can endorse positions all day, but we can't endorse candidates. And we do make an invitation to any candidate that wants to come and get on the air with us. Come on down. Okay.
Send an email to bob@cctaxpayers.com.
Very good. So where are we going now?
I have some questions about IRENA's law. And since you're in the legislature right now, you might be able to tell us what that's all about.
Yes, and actually my name's on the bill as the sponsor, the primary sponsor. Because of IRENA's unfortunate murder on public transportation, we took some steps that had needed to be taken for a while. And they had to do with pretrial release and bail bonding for citizens. A lot of judges were letting magistrates, out on a written promise to appear, a cashless bond. And now we're going to disallow that in all circumstances. When there's a felony, there are very specific circumstances that, depending on the felony and how many prior felonies you have, you must be released in with a home ankle monitoring system or into the custody of a person who's going to specifically take care of you. We are looking more at people's mental health, that the officers who arrest someone and bring them in are required to tell anything they know about the mental health, whether there was a breakdown going on at the time of the crime, whether they're aware of family history that's a problem, so that those people can be treated differently, made sure to be given the evaluation and taken to the hospital for an evaluation within a set period of time, and then brought back before the magistrate with the results of that evaluation. So it's an effort to take care of that. Second thing it did was put the Chief Justice over some magistrates, that if the Chief Justice sees a magistrate acting that far outside the law, the Chief Justice can't remove. That Constitution explains how magistrates are dealt with, but he can recommend to the Chief District Court Judge, who's supposed to be responsible for them, that they need to be removed, and they must conduct a hearing to determine if that magistrate should remain in office. We also then got down into the death penalty. That's something that has been on hold for a long time, and it was one of those, again, with the court system, you get a problem. There were some issues about the death itself, and there's a lawsuit that's been pending for 10 years in Wake County that's on hold. And it's on hold at the request of the government attorneys and the people who bought the lawsuit. In other words, a de facto stop the death penalty.
Right.
This bill was an effort to bring it back within... One of the main issues is the form of lethal injection. The Medical Society, which we've now worked out, says you can't do it, doctors. You're not allowed to kill people. The drug company said they were talking about not making the drugs. So what we've said is, all right, we'll take it away from medical. This is not the practice of medicine to perform an execution. So we'll let the prison people can actually put in the IV and put in the drug. The second thing is, if that cannot be done, then the prison can consider other alternatives. It's been found legal and legitimate to use the electric chair, the firing squads, and so there are other forms of execution that can take place. It also says that within 24 months of a death sentence, all motions for appropriate relief need to be filed. So we're attempting to help enforce crime enforcement. How's that? I was talking to, actually told the story on the floor. I have a sister who lives in Cabarrus County, right outside of Mecklenburg County, right outside of Charlotte. So she lives in Cabarrus County. A couple of young guys stole a car and attempted to run over the owner of the car. And they're ultimately charged with assault with a deadly weapon with intent to kill. They took the car and went over the line to Cabarrus County and broke into houses using that as their means of transportation. Then they fled to South Carolina and ran into a liquor store to rob it with the car, to leave the car there. Charlotte Mecklenburg got those charges against those kids and heard about all the other things they had done and put them on a $4,000 unsecured bond. Unsecured. Post nothing, go home. Luckily, they transferred on up to Cabarrus County, where they broke into people's houses in the night, and they got a $400,000 bond. I don't even remember what happened in South Carolina. But that much difference with knowing the crimes that had occurred and had taken place, we clearly needed to do something about the bond and bail situation.
Now, what is the status of that bill?
It passed yesterday. The Senate passed it on Monday. The House passed it yesterday. Tuesday. And it goes to the governor. He's got 10 days to sign it, veto it, or just not do anything and let it become law. It was done by a veto-proof majority in the House. So we think even if he vetoes it, we can probably override that veto and make it law. So it's on its way to becoming law.
I have a question. I think a lot of people that are reading about this case don't understand how magistrate judges become magistrates. For example, the magistrate judge that let Irina's killer out, not a lawyer. She went to law school. She went to Cooley Law School, which is the lowest rated law school in the nation. And then she couldn't pass the bar. There's no requirement for the magistrate in that county to be a lawyer.
There's no requirement anywhere in the state of North Carolina for a magistrate to be a lawyer. Some of their pay is based on whether they're a lawyer, whether they have a bachelor's degree, whether they have experience in law enforcement. So pays are set up different ways. Magistrates are nominated by the clerk of court. Anybody who wants to be a magistrate fills out a form with the clerk of court. Then the clerk sends the magistrate information applications to the resident superior court judge, chief resident superior court judge. He then appoints the magistrates, but then the discipline falls to the district court judges, chief district court judge. So that's all set up in constitution. We can't change that without going through the citizenry. And that may be something we look at, but at this point, that's how that establishment of judges takes place.
Is it believed that the governor will sign this, or no idea?
I don't have any idea, but I think he's less likely to veto it when the vote was 81 to 31 in the House. To override a veto, we only need 72 votes.
So even though it has death penalty in it, you don't think you'll veto it?
Again, 81-32, and we were missing six Republicans, so the vote could have been easily 88. But it was there.
Now, one other question. Apparently, there was something else, I don't know whether it's in the same bill or not. Apparently, they've also authorized some money for more district attorneys.
There's been a shortage of assistant district attorneys in Mecklenburg County for a while. And in the budget that we had been working with and passing back and forth, there were 10 new assistant district attorney positions for Mecklenburg County. And we went ahead and authorized those.
Even prior to the budget, yeah.
Right. So we do sometimes little things that need immediate fixes. Even if we don't have a budget, we go ahead and put them in.
But thank you.
Mm-hmm. It's my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, that no Democrat in either the Senate or the House voted for this anti-crime legislation. Is that correct?
No. There were 13 or 14 Democrats in the House who voted for this bill.
Well, that's great. That's encouraging.
That's for it.
It's the issue about the death penalty is interesting to me. I worked for the Department of Correction for 30 years. When I first started, they had just had a Supreme Court ruling that overturned every death row conviction. This was in the 70s. And there were like 25, 30 people on death row. And this was, I believe, nationwide. It wasn't just in North Carolina. So when I say the Supreme Court, I'm talking about the U.S. Supreme Court. And then gradually they started following new procedures and they put people on. And of course, we haven't had an execution in North Carolina since 2006. And I looked this up the other day and I saw that nationwide, the average length of stay for someone who is actually executed is 22 years. So they're 22 years on death row. And I think part of that process is what you mentioned, you addressed, that they have to, the lawyers They have one issue they want to make a motion on. They do that one. So even when usually they lose. Then they file the next one. They do it sequentially instead of what you're saying. Now they're going to be required to do it within 2 years. Because the effectiveness of the death penalty becomes really reduced when a person is convicted, a crime occurs, the person's convicted, and then 20 years later, people don't even remember the case. It needs to, if justice to be, must be fair, but it needs to be reasonably swift, in my opinion, not drawn out through the courts purposely. The attorneys keep getting paid. The longer they draw it out, they get paid, because most of them are taxpayer-funded.
Public defenders.
So I'm so glad that they took this up. It's really encouraging.
One of the arguments on the floor against the bill was, well, we now have this innocence commission, and we found some people that were wrongfully convicted, and some people have had ineffective assistance of counsel and things like that. I stood up and reminded everybody that we now have capital defenders, attorneys who are experienced in doing nothing but capital defense work, keeping people, giving them a fair trial through their sentence. And we don't have those ineffective assistance of counsel claims anymore because we now have those professional counsels.
Yeah.
So that's less and less concern. The Innocence Inquiry Commission is looking at cases that are way before we had public defenders. They're finding ineffective assistance of counsel. They found a couple of people who were innocent, but 11 people in like 15 years.
I mean, you're
not enough.
Yeah, you can't stop something because there might be an error occasionally. I mean, it's hard to accept the idea someone would be executed innocently. But on the other hand, you can't let all these guilty people go unpunished for an extended period of time.
Well, everyone who was found innocent or was relieved had more to do with an ineffective assistance of counsel that we don't have anymore. We do have the very effective counsel now.
Rather than the facts of the crime.
Right. We also have DNA and things like that we didn't have 30 or 40 years ago. I think now if you commit a crime, there's no way you're going to not leave some kind of DNA evidence or something behind. I mean,
you know, Charlie Kirk's killer texted to his transgender lover that he didn't leave any evidence behind except that rifle, and that he really thought he was going to keep this secret till the end of his life because he didn't leave him any evidence to get him. As we're watching the video clip of him climbing down off the roof and the pictures of him walking up the stairs to the roof.
Yeah, and also the DNA on the blanket, the rifle was wrapped in, the fingerprint, the whole thing.
Yeah.
Folks, we're going to take another quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. Again, this is CCTA Wake Up Call. Again, we're a 501c3 organization. We've got to remember that.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
Hi, my name's Elena Huber, and I'm running for your New Bern Ward 1 Alderman. As a retired military officer, I offer extensive experience to civic leadership. Years of managing complex operations under pressure make me adept at long-term planning and crisis response. I have led diverse teams through deployments, combat casualties, natural disasters, and the COVID-19 pandemic. My experience with large bureaucracies will help me navigate government systems and promote action from within. Whether it's a hurricane or budget shortfall, I have been trained to be calm in the storm, bringing order and clarity. With 22 years spent developing others and building teams, I am equipped to promote effective action, and I am ready to go to work. Please vote for me on Election Day, October 7th, and early voting begins on September 18th.
Just who are these people doing this CCTA program? People in the community that love this country to protect individual liberty and to preserve the U.S. Constitution and free enterprise system. To learn more, go to cctaxpayers.com. That's cctaxpayers.com. Join Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association and make your voice heard.
Welcome back again. Thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. Mary wanted to bring up.
Sarah, I wanted to ask you about Senate Bill 13, the Terrorist Prevention Act, what that is and what's involved.
Certainly. The House has passed it. The Senate has not yet. And it says that if an act of violence takes place toward a person based on the political views, political speech, political whatever, then that creates an aggravating factor. So, for example, if you are hit or things are thrown at you because of your political speech, and it can be proven that that's the way, then it gets punished one level higher than the offense. Now, it also says if a death results because of that political speech, as in the Charlie Kirk incident, it automatically makes it eligible for the death penalty. Okay.
Yeah, I wanted to clarify that, or not clarify it, but comment on it, which was last week we were talking about aggravating and mitigating circumstances in death penalty cases. And so Utah used a political murder as an aggravating circumstance to elevate it to aggravated murder, which makes it a capital case. So I had asked her off the air if this Terrorist Prevention Act added a political act as a aggravating circumstance in a death penalty case. And she explained to me that it did. Yes. So that's interesting.
Yes, and I'm explaining it to you from a legislative point, not from anything that would happen on the Supreme Court. But also backing up to the IRENA legislation that we did add it as an aggravating factor that if you kill someone while on public transportation, that's an aggravating factor in a murder case as well.
While you're here, is there anything else going on in the North Carolina legislature that you want to talk about?
Wow. What a wild open question.
Well, other than you're going to set the budget aside or whatever.
Yeah. We're not really much of it. I will tell you, this is another one of my little jobs when I don't have anything else to do. I'm a co-chair on the elections committee for the state of North Carolina, and we are in the process of working toward making permanent some actions that are now being taken by our current board, such as removing the Never Never voters. Put it into statute, make sure it's clear they were never supposed to have been able to vote. Making sure that the voting records include the Social Security number and date of birth. Our current elections director, Sam Hayes, has already worked on these. And I said, Sam, I know you're following the law, you're doing everything you're supposed to do, but let me find out, show me where it's not properly put in statute, because I want to put it in there where it's absolutely clear that we need to clean up our voter rolls and make sure that they're done and that they're audited periodically.
And we also have to thank our new auditor.
Yes.
For taking all the actions that he has been taking. He's got the world in a tizzy right now, whether it's the Department of Transportation versus the licensing. And
Dave Volek is a worker bee.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
He's up in my area right now. We had the Winston-Salem Forsyth County School Board that overspent their budget by $46 million and would like us to bail them out. And what they did is during the COVID years, they took temporary money and made permanent positions and now want us to fund those. And as their school enrollment dropped, they didn't reduce their positions. They gave big bonuses to different people, and they're in a real pickle. We are not planning to bail them out if their representatives have now come around saying, well, maybe we would give them a little bit of a loan, but it will be a loan that has to be paid back. They currently own the Board of Education for $3.4 million, and interest is supposed to start accruing, and they've agreed to give them an extra month or two to
What are the consequences if no one bails them out? What happens next?
The school has to deal with it somehow, and they've done it by cutting back on transportation. They've been cutting staff positions. They've been cutting anything that they can, and they're making the parents scream. This is something else that made me angry about all that. They made the mistake. They made the problems, and now they've been using the students to protest. On school time, they're having the students draw up posters and walk out of class and demonstrate. And that's wrong. What they should be doing is talking to the students about the lack of responsibility that the school board showed. And the school board acknowledges they've messed up. They've messed up big. But we're using that as an opportunity for kids to revolt against the government and expect somebody to bail them out, as opposed to saying the Board of Education has this problem and as responsible adults, they need to fix it. But that bothers me.
The lesson that is being taught to the kids is the exact wrong lesson.
I have gone to many classrooms and spoken. And I will tell you, when I leave a classroom, the kids do not know if I'm Republican or Democrat. I answer their questions very factually, very straightforward. Matter of fact, sometimes people ask me, well, what party do you belong to? And I'm like, does it really matter? I'm teaching you about the law and about how things are supposed to go. But we have lots of teachers that are not doing that. They're telling you this is... I grew up in a town where my teacher told me I needed to be Democrat because I wasn't going to get a vote for governor if I didn't do that. I'd never get to vote for governor if I didn't register as a Democrat. And that's wrong. That kind of speech, but it still goes on every day.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, one of the things that concerns me, if you look at what's going on in the universities and the public schools, is that there's overwhelming numbers of Democrats, liberals, leftists, whatever you want to call them, that are controlling the universities from the administration down through the professors and so on. Now, the Democrats are real bigots wanting DEI. They want equality. They want the correct number by race. They want the correct number by gender. Is there any way that the General Assembly can look at the staffing in these public schools and universities and look at it from by political party? For example, if you go into a university and 85-90% of those professors are Democrats, why can't there be an effort, some kind of requirement to rebalance that so that there are some political balance? Because this is what's ruining the country.
Can I comment on that?
Sure.
Because I used to be a visiting professor at ECU. And the point is that the faculty hires their own faculty members in their department. And so pretty soon, as the time goes by, pretty soon the Democrats, who are the majority, hire the next Democrat, and there's a few Republicans left in the criminal justice department, thank the Lord.
Yeah, and the thing is, I was a graduate student and a graduate assistant at North Carolina State University, saw the same thing. When they were hiring professors, they had one that was really well liked, but he was a Republican, and the chairman of the department was dead set against him, and they did not give him tenure. My point is, we know the abuses are occurring. The question is there any effort, or can something be done, or perhaps we could figure out a way of counteracting that? Because these places are getting state tax funding.
And we have put forth several bills in the last 2 years that mandate taking DEI out of hiring choices in college, taking it out of the curriculum, and taking it out of the state government. DEI is not a policy that we need to use.
Right.
They've been using it in medical schools for a while, and now the medical schools have said we've seen a decline in the ability of the product we're turning out, the doctors we're turning out, and therefore we need to abandon that practice. My opponent, you're never supposed to mention the name, but I've got a video where she is talking to people, activists in community, and she says, well, you've got so-and-such a company here, and you're a 20% minority area. If they've not hired 20% of their people, then they're just wrong. If they've not hired 20% minority, they're just wrong. They've decided that the only qualification to work here is to be white.
Well, we've seen what has happened in our colleges where 30 or 40 years ago, they were teaching Latin, and now they're teaching remedial English because they've got a quota. Now, they've gotten rid of a lot of it, but they've, to some extent, still have a quota system, and you're bringing in kids that are not equipped to take freshman English.
Well, DEI is at a different level altogether. It's in the administration of college. But this item that he's talking about forcing the faculty to change and hire Republicans, the university is based on faculty self-governance. You would have to tear the university apart and rebuild it.
Well,
so that
good.
Is not.
Let's get to
it's
it.
Not
some
a of the
no, that's federal.
Some
and
of the
state
trustees,
intervention.
Some of the trustees, and some of the board of governors are working on that. They need to because we are now getting them appointed as Republican. But I he wants to talk. But I will give you one more example of one of the problems with their university system. And this is before we ever started talking about DEI. Remember, I've been in the General Assembly for 17 years now. I was shocked to learn that the university system measures their graduation rates by 5 years instead of four.
Yep.
So then we start, the student comes in, we give them 5 years. At the end of 5 years, the overall university system is only graduating 40% of their students. And then, again, they pick their own students, just like you were talking. They got to meet qualifications to get there. And what did they tell me? 50% or better are having to take some remediation course in their first year. Courses that can be taken at the community college system for less money. We've been trying to work through a lot of those problems.
You know, we also spent a lot of time up in the legislature when you had the hearings on Common Core. As much as I hate to say it, but again, when you ask the various organizations to take DEI out, just like they did with Common Core, they just rename it, and it's still there within the curriculum or it's within the mindset, but they've renamed it, and somehow we have to get that naming out of there. I remember when we were up there for the bill that required that you teach U.S. history through the year, and how is it taught? It's taught on a break. Sorry, pardon my French.
Yeah, but the university system is the one system where you're rewarded for not doing the best job you can do. Mm-hmm. Because if you can keep them 5 years instead of four, hey, that's a whole lot of extra money you get. And what's your punishment for not doing that? Nothing. And you got these students saddled with all this debt who don't have a degree that they can make money off of. We've been working on those for 10 or 15 years.
Especially when the federal government has decided we're going to give funding to anybody that asks. Nope, we got 30 seconds, so somebody's got to speak up.
I want to thank her for being here today.
We got one more segment.
I think I'm going to slip out, though, and let y'all, I'll get too involved. I'll let you deal with all the federal issues without me here.
I'll make a comment. Maybe we can bring it up the next segment. Is the reality of the foreign students, particularly Chinese, in this country? And my last research on this, there's 350,000 to 400,000 Chinese students in the United States. We need information from our public universities, and that's what we can control because they get tax bonded. I would like to at least see the reporting of that and make that public. And whether we need to, what we can do about it, I don't know, but at least we would have the information that we need. That's where you got to start, in my opinion.
Okay, now we're going to take the break. Thanks for listening to our sponsors and supporters. This is CCTA Wake Up Call.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business, it's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Other restaurants claim their food is fresh and fast, but are they friendly? At Moore's, you're treated like family the minute you walk into their doors. With locations in Winterville, New Bern, Swansboro, Moorhead City, and Jacksonville, we've been practicing what we preach since 1945. At Moore's, our barbecue is slow-cooked and smoked over real wood daily until it's so tender it's falling off the bone. Combined with our fresh chicken, cooked-to-order seafood, and homemade fixins, we're sure you'll agree. If it's not Moore's, it's less.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
The County Compass is a rapidly growing, free weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news, coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
Thank you for listening to our sponsors, and welcome back. We're going to head off to the United Nations, Alan.
Yeah, I'd just like to make a couple of comments. I hope other people have similar comments about what transpired at the United Nations yesterday when President Trump made his talk to the United Nations. He was outstanding. He did not pull any punches. He came out about the problems with the UN generally. And we've got an organization, the UN. We funded 45 to 50% of the funding. And most of the actions there are anti-American. That's being controlled by these countries that have no love for the United States. But he came out with his concerns about the CO2 scam, remember, about the green energy and so on. And he just covered so many topics.
And he also said he's essentially stopped or interfered with seven wars, and the UN didn't help in any one of them.
Didn't even call,
no.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing was his comments about the war in Ukraine. I mean, he's come around completely 180 degrees, perhaps, in his approach to that. I think he was, at the beginning, hopeful that Putin would come along and say, well, you know, well, I'll negotiate a ceasefire and so on. Now he's just accepting the fact Putin's not going to stop unless he's forced to. And, you know, encouraging everybody to do these extended sanctions. A terrific speech, and we finally had a president that stands up and says the truth, because everything he said was truthful.
Yeah,
I think one of the most important things he said was he lectured them on how to save your culture. Close your borders. You're tearing your culture apart. You each have unique history. If you let all this unmitigation immigration come in, you're going to lose your culture. If you need help on how to close your borders, I know how to do it. I'll be happy to help you. And I looked at the faces of the people that were listening to him, and they were just stone-faced because they had the leaders from the countries the immigration's coming from, and then they had, you know, like the UK and France and Germany that are being overwhelmed by Syrians, etc.
The other part of that is the DEI culture. So it wasn't just immigration, but the DEI is a big part of those cultures as well.
And I think you would probably find that most of the people there were, like you mentioned, Pat, were the leadership of their countries that are in favor of some of these things. Whereas I think if you went to the people of these countries, they would be in support of a lot of things, the positions that Trump was taking. For example, high cost of energy in these countries. And so it's most of it due to this environmental wacko stuff.
One of the things that you need to consider when dealing with the UN is one of the significant power blocks in the UN is the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, which represents the states that are sending the migrants to Europe and every place else. And they are a very powerful bloc. There are 57 nations that are part of that. They're all Muslim nations run by Sharia law. And because of that bloc, I'm not sure the UN is capable of doing anything useful anymore, if they ever were.
Well, I remember when the immigration first started, and the Germans were, particularly the German women, were standing there holding signs, "Welcome immigrants!" You know, and they were so proud of themselves for being virtue signaling and all that. Now that they've had to put up with the rape rate, I don't think they'd be out there with those signs.
Yeah.
By the way, I think something that we didn't say at the very beginning of this was that yesterday, as being Tuesday, that when the president was there before the United Nations, three major things happened. Number one, they had cordoned off the front of the building. And when French President Macron said, "Well, you've got to let me through because I'm the French president," Trump's response was, "Walk in. You got to walk in." And then secondly, apparently the escalator was shut off midway. And I think we said, and most of us have seen the video where there was a Democrat on the escalator when it was shut off, and that person was stymied, stuck in the middle. What do I do when the escalator won't run? And then the third thing was that the teleprompter got shut off. So rather than Trump giving a 15-minute written speech, with the teleprompter, he was allowed to speak off the cuff for 55 minutes. Glenn, you wanted to add something.
Well, the other thing I would say, those 56 countries or whatever,
57.
This Islamic, what's their contribution to fund United Nations? And I would like to put in a factor that to the extent you contribute to the United Nations is the influence you get to have. And if you put not much in, then your influence is not so good.
Yeah.
Well, I think that the United Nations has proven that they're useless. And I think that they were a carryover from, I know they were a carryover from World War II and put in the idea that they would help facilitate peace. Well, if you look at what's happened since the United Nations was put into effect, they have not done anything to preserve peace. They ought to be done away with, or at least they ought to be moved out of this country to somewhere else.
When Trump warned the audience about the green scam, I don't think he mentioned this, but the UN has admitted in writing that the whole reason they're pushing the green scam is redistribution of income.
Yes.
So it's a Marxist idea. That's why they're pushing it. We shouldn't be involved with it at all. And I wouldn't be sorry to see us get out of the UN.
I would love it.
Well, I think if we took a vote of this radio station, I think we'd have unanimity that we should extract ourselves from the United Nations, let them go off and say whatever they want. It would be meaningless anyway. Who cares about what they discuss in the UN?
By the way, one other thing that I'm changing subjects. I'm going to use the term Schumer shutdown. Folks, remember, Schumer shutdown. Why does he want to shut the country down?
Well, they're not bargaining in good faith. I mean, the shutdown bill that they proposed to Trump had restoration of funds for all the things that Trump has gotten rid of. So for transgender, for mutilation surgery, for health care for illegal aliens, et cetera, it was a total bad faith bill that they knew he wasn't going to accept.
Right.
And so it was just total theater, like most of their stuff. And I'm, for one, am glad when they demanded a meeting with Trump, he told them to go pound sand.
Yeah, you're not, no, it's not worth it. It's not worth my time.
There's no way we can come to an agreement. No. So I wanted to mention Charlie Kirk. I for one, did not watch the TV show of the
service memorial thing.
The service memorial. I did not watch it. It was going to be too sad. And so I didn't want to go through that. Well, but I've seen clips from it, and I'm proud to say that our side of the political spectrum was interested in revival, not revenge.
Well, it didn't. The danger to me was it was going, I was afraid it was going to turn out to be the Paul Wellstone funeral. And it didn't. It was about as apolitical as it could have been. And some of the people that got up and spoke were just amazing.
Well, I was struck by the fact that it was, to some extent, as much as it could have been, uplifting to the extent that they reinforced the notion that what Charlie Kirk started needs to be continued. And he brought up a lot of issues, that he brought up things, and these were discussed at this event about the importance of the nuclear family, for one thing, the importance of men and how marriage makes a man into a man, things that we have traditionally lost sight of. So those things were brought up. And the profession of faith by all these politicians was amazing to me, because a lot of them admitted that they've never talked about their faith or religion. And, you know, that's the foundation of this country. And those things shouldn't be hidden. We shouldn't be anti any faith, but we should certainly recognize the importance of the Judeo-Christian traditions and how we socialize people in those traditions. And that was gratifying to me to see that.
Well, that's another thing that Trump mentioned in his UN speech, that we need to protect the Judeo-Christian foundation for Western society, and that we should protect the most persecuted religion in the world, which is Christianity.
I got to add something. I didn't see it either, but the fact that Erica forgave the assassin for killing her husband within a week and a half of the
assassination. Well, I saw it. It was traumatic to watch it. The struggle she was going through to do that, because obviously the loss and pain that she's under, that she was able to control to be able to say that. Now, obviously, she's a better Christian than I am. If that had happened in one of my family, I want to see that person executed. Mm-hmm. And well, if that makes me a bad Christian, so be it. But I believe in justice. But I certainly respect the position she took and the strength that she showed to take it.
Well, I think Trump spoke for us all when he said, I hate my opponent. I'm sorry if that makes me a bad Christian, but I hate them.
I'm going to jump topics. You folks hear about the shooting at the ICE facility in Dallas?
Yes.
I know we're at a point where we're about ready to close things out, but recently... people signing the shells that they shoot, they signed and put stuff on these shells as well,
against
the ammo, and it was against ICE. So they're making sure that that's specifically listed in the evidence so that they don't have to worry about the media trying to pass it off on some other purpose.
Oh, well, that sniper committed suicide and didn't shoot the ICE agents, shot the detainees. So it wasn't much of a sniper to begin with.
Yeah. But it's people that are ruthless against law and order.
Yeah, it's the left. A lot of these people are from the left, and we can't deny it.
You know, in our last 15 seconds or so, I know that we didn't get to it. The Secret Service dismantled the SIM server threat.
Yes.
Apparently there was something to try to shut down the whole phone network in the New York City area. Well, folks, we're actually out of time.